Chuck Muckle, and I'll be appearing as Oscar Levant at the Tada Theater Wednesday, March 13th at 7 p.m. in New York. And you are listening to Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Dave's Gone By radio program of the air, and shalom, damn it, to all of you. I am Rabbi Saul Solomon, the spiritual leader and founder of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York, and I am very, very thrilled to be talking to our special guest on the radio today. He is a veteran actor and singer and performer. And he is going to be playing a Jewish boy, and not necessarily nice Jewish boy, but a famous for his time Jewish boy in a one-man show on March 13th in New York City at the Tada Theater on West 28th Street. The show is called At Wit's End, and it's all about the pianist and raconteur. I like big words like that. Raconteur Oscar Levant. He's being played by our guest in the neighborhood this morning. And if I tell you, my favorite actor name used to be Rip Torn. Used to love the Rip Torn. You know, you take a pair of brilliant, whoever thought of that. And then Cruel, whatever father thought of that. But now, oh my goodness, ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking to a man, to an actor named Chuck Muckle. I was tempted to do this whole segment just saying his name over and over and over again. But I'll let him say it. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Chuck Muckle.
Hi, I'm Chuck Muckle, and in fact, I did an interview where someone said I wanted so badly to call you Muck Chuckle, and he did at the end of the interview, so everybody has their own take on it for sure. I wanted to say happy Purim several days late.
Well, thank you so much.
We had Hamantaschen at our Oscar party the other night, so.
But you're not one of the tribe, are you?
No, I don't think I am. We were ethnic. Our background is ethnic Germans who grew up in Hungary. So I'm still wondering if maybe there's something in there somewhere. I'll have to do more research. I feel like it's a part of me somehow. Maybe because of being in New York for a long time.
That could be it. But also, right. your background is Hungarian and, as you said, German. So first question has to be, what was your grandfather doing in 1941? Just curious.
In 1941.
Yeah, just curious.
He would have been living in Pittsburgh.
Oh, so you guys were already.
He was a baker for a while, and he was also a truck driver. So that would have been his main occupation in Pittsburgh.
So your grandmother would have been a Nazi. No, I'm kidding. I kid. Just kidding.
Not that I recall. I'll have to look that up on Ancestry.com.
Could you do me a favor, please?
Sure.
Can you say your name again?
Sure, it is Chuck Muckle.
Now,
that is real.
Is that on your birth certificate, or were you Charles Muckle the third?
Charles J. Muckle. My middle initial is J, and that's for John. So that is indeed, and that's my father's name. So my aunts would call him Big Chucky, and I was Little Chucky. So
you were Little Chucky Muckle.
Yes.
Oh my
up.
God! But you had to make a decision at the point where you were deciding to be an actor and a performer and joining, I assume, you're in Equity.
Right.
So you did not go with Charles Muckle.
No, I didn't.
Why?
Well, because Chuck Muckle just had that sort of asinine sound to it, and
did you say asinine or asinine?
Asinine. Everyone thinks a lot of different things about it, for sure. So, but it seemed very memorable. In fact, I have a former acupuncturist who said you ought to have a candy bar, a Chuck Muckle candy bar. He said it sounded like it should be a candy bar.
That does sound. It's like a peanuts in it somewhere.
Right. Exactly. So I haven't gotten to that yet.
Wow. The Chuck Muckle bar. The Muckleberry. No, all right. We're going
right,
too far
right.
with it. Yeah. No, but I'm sorry to be. I'm not making fun. It's just
oh,
so.
Oh, no,
as you know.
Now, I make fun of it, too. So.
Do you think your name has helped and or hindered your career as, I assume, you know, as a serious quote-unquote actor?
Well, that I have a feeling people would look at my name and say, how could he possibly do Shakespeare or some serious role? And I certainly have done. I've played Henry in Lion in Winter and lead in Judgment at Nuremberg. So I certainly have done serious roles. But I have a feeling, you know, people's instant reactions are, oh, how could he be? How could he possibly be serious?
Right. Although maybe the old
your reaction was so.
The old con man and Muckleberry Finn. You could do that.
Exactly.
That in,
and then there's the Mr. Muckle that was in the... what was his name? He was the blind man in the...
W.C. Fields. It's a gift.
That's, so there is a little bit of a history with the name.
But do you know... well, I guess that was... We weren't like Mucklewits 100 years ago. They didn't shorten it to Ellis Island. It was always...
I don't think so, but see, certainly the name is Scottish, because many a Mickle makes a Muckle if you favor Muckles. It has a whole history.
What the hell does that mean?
it used to be a surname, so if you were in a city somewhere in Scotland and you had a big John Clancy and a little John Clancy... Muckle John Clancy was the big one. That's how you distinguish them. And then Mickle John Clancy was the little one. So the phrase, many a Mickle makes a Muckle if you favor Muckles.
I had that. Wow. That
tells
so,
you how, where it came from.
That's both fascinating and adorable. I love that. And you know, there is an actor, a New York actor named Mickle Maher, or Mayer. I don't know how he pronounces it. But his first name is Mickle. So, you know.
I have to look him up.
I don't know about your sexuality, but if you guys got together and were legally married, he could be Mickle Muckle.
Mickle Muckle, right.
That would be so... I'm so sorry to do this
Mickle
to you.
Mickle meet Muckle. It's like Uma Oprah, Uma Oprah.
That's right,
Mickle Muckle.
You can form a circle, the Mickle Muckle right. circle, right?
Right, right.
And you could be tickling each other, so it'd be a...
Something like that.
A Mickle Muckle tickle circle. All right, enough.
Mickling at one end and muckling at the other, I guess.
All right, now... Now, we will get back to this, I promise you, but let's talk about your career. I've tortured you enough on this thing for the moment. Speaking of torture, now, and I don't know if it was torture, maybe it was wonderful, but you toured with the one, the only, and the late Robert Goulet.
I did, twice.
Twice. So, you hear all sorts of things about his personality and what he was like, and was he, you know, he could have been Jekyll and Hyde or like Jerry Lewis. What was it like touring with Goulet?
Well, maybe a lot, some of that is true, because on the one hand, he wanted to be one of the boys, but on the other hand, he had this personality that had to be maintained. So I think the two would always conflict. I mean, he and Vera, his third wife, were just very... personalities. There were big personalities. But, like, for instance, when I first met him, they introduced me. I got onto the tour of South Pacific. That's a whole funny story, too. But
Wait. You know what? Tell it, and then we'll get back to Goulet. We have time.
Okay. I'm auditioning for South Pacific in New York. Ron Field is the director. Late now, Ron Field. Rest his soul. And the casting people, they're all sitting there. I'm singing There's Nothing Like a Dame. I forget the lyrics.
Oh, yoy, yoy.
They start shouting the lyrics at me, and I'm, like, trying to throw them back at them. I thought, oh, this is the end of this audition. I can just go home and go to bed. And then I got the job. So you never know.
Did you ever ask why they hired you anyway?
I didn't. I didn't have the nerve, I guess, at the time. So I guess I'll never know.
But you got the gig. You went up with South Pacific, one of the greatest shows ever made.
Right.
And you were you cable or who were you?
No, one of the CBs. We played different roles, but it was just a pleasure every night to sit there and listen to Bally High when all the score, the whole score was wonderful, and he was wonderful too.
In it, okay.
Excellent, the Beck. But what I was going to say is when I first met the first greeting, hello, Chuck. This is Mr. G. Good to meet you. He's very, actually being sort of serious. You go to shake his hand, he has a fart maker in his hand. So it makes a big fart noise when you grab his hand.
Are you sure it wasn't, he had anything in his hand? Are you sure he didn't have just a really big fast food lunch?
I don't know. I didn't know, I wasn't thinking about that, but he had this penchant for being a troublemaker. Practical joker, I would say more.
But that's cute. That's all right.
It was very endearing. Well, it was very endearing to the whole audience. Certainly, when he had prostate surgery at one point. And Pat Keyes, who was his who was playing his the opposite role to him, and I'm blanking on her, Guinevere, said to him one night, "When I see a twinkle in your eye," because he was wearing diapers at the time, I know that there's a trickle down your thigh. So everyone would fall into the groove with him with that stuff because he was just a player at it, and sometimes he was you know, he'd go overboard or, you know, just be a little, he'd even do it on stage at times, so.
Really?
He'd toy with people. And the one of the funnier things that happened, of course, that was in Camelot. There was a dog that that Merlin brought out. Well, he was actually the other older character who he plays. I'm forgetting his name, too.
Pellinore,
right.
Right.
So he brings out the dog. Now, I'm friends with the people who are keeping the dog, and I knew that earlier in the day they had neglected to walk the dog.
Oh, no.
He brings out the dog. The dog proceeds to go downstage, put its ass out to the audience, and take the biggest dump. The audience just lost it.
Of course.
And no one could say anything. And the chorus guys ran off. He was the only one who thought, who was thinking, ran off, got a broom and a dustpan and came out and made a bit of it. And it took forever for the show to get back on.
Well, sure.
When Robert arrived, his next line was, "Jenny, what's going on here?" He couldn't even say the line hardly because everyone was in such hysterics. So it was right up his alley in a way because this thing happened and he was able to just move with it in the crazy part of him. So,
but that those are all really nice and happy stories, which I guess is good to hear. I thought the outsized ego was also, was he nasty or mean, or was it always just he had to be in the spotlight and he was always playing jokes?
I think that was part of it. I mean, he had his cranky sides, but I don't think he showed those that much to people as much as he sort of channeled it into being blustery, I think. He never was outright mean or nasty, I would say.
Well, that's great. That's good to hear.
So it's an interesting side to him that maybe people don't think as much about. Like, for instance, we were in Dallas. Again, that was with Camelot. There were 300 people waiting for him outside the stage door.
Yeah.
We stood there and watched him for an hour, I guess. He spent time with each person as if they were the only person there.
That's old school.
It was sort of amazing. It's not a thing you would necessarily think that he would do, but there was this part of him, one, that knew where his bread was buttered, and two, just knew how to, you know, be charming and then flirt with the ladies, the older ladies, the younger ladies, everybody. So I think his thing was he always wanted to connect with people, but he couldn't necessarily because of this standard that was set up for him. They had to ride in a limo all the time. We were in El Paso, and the theater was in the hotel. But literally, he would come out the stage door, get in the limo, ride up the drive to the right in the same building to the hotel to their room.
Oh,
so,
my God!
They maintained that standard of having this thousands of dollars a week limo, no matter where they were, and it was just all part of that, the mystique, the persona of Robert Goulet, the
diaper wearing practical joker,
the diaper wearing baritone, right, with the voice of gold, and he sang wonderfully up till the end. I mean, not to the end. He was still singing great, and he even said, I guess, to the doctor, so I heard a story, fix my lungs and I'll sing till I'm 100. But that was the sad part, that he got this pulmonary thrombosis, I think they called it, and he wasn't able to survive it. He would have needed lung transplants.
Now also, by the way, we're talking with, could you say your name, please?
Chuck Muckle.
We're talking with Chuck Muckle. I love it. I love it. You also have toured with a guy who, maybe it's just because he was in that show, but was John Astin creepy and kooky, or was he just fun?
No, that's so funny because he played that in that weird show. He was a mensch. He was an actor's actor, basically, and very low key. Different in as many ways probably from Robert, even though they're about the same generation, and they both wore mustaches. So keep that in mind.
Oh, that's very important, right there.
Exactly. So
any John Astin memories? Any cute, cool anecdotes? Funny things?
John was very, again, very, he was just really, really an everyday guy. But what he did, which impressed me, was on opening night,
And by the way, this was Christmas Carol.
He was playing Scrooge. Opening night, it was the Palace Theater in Albany, New York. And he sat, apparently, and read everyone's bio and walked around to each person's dressing room and said something to them to connect with their bio, each actor. And he came to me, and he realized that I, from reading my bio, that I had done Lend Me a Tenor a while back. And he had played the lead role in that in Chicago in a tour. And he walked into my dressing room and started throwing me lines from the show, and we bantered the lines back and forth, and it was just such a wonderful moment.
That is.
He had realized that I played the younger role, he played the older role, and we just went through this scene, and I was so psyched by that he would have taken that time and made a little moment with everybody in the cast.
That's terrific.
For the show. Yeah, it was good. So I think sometimes these folks, I mean, it's a hard biz, we know.
Oh, yeah.
They get a rep, and they look or seem like they're one way, and then you see these other sides of them, and it's pretty illuminating.
Yeah, I don't know if John Astin had a bad rep or anything like that. It's just it's just what people might think of knowing him
from the
Addams Family.
Well, one of the stranger moments, we were out with him and his wife, newer wife Val, we were out with people who brought a bust of Lurch to dinner, and it was about 2 feet high, and they were just sitting at the dinner table, and they asked him, so how's Patty?
Oy.
And this was years ago, right? So yeah. that they haven't been together, so people can not think, too, so...
But wow, I mean, he's sitting there with his new wife, why would they, oh my God.
Of course. But these were eccentric people who apparently followed him around, and they would appear at different performances, and that happens obviously to people too.
That's you have to.
I haven't been stalked yet, but I'm waiting for that to happen. So.
There isn't the Muckle fanboy contingent yet. Maybe
it'll start now. Maybe.
Especially since you're doing a brand. Well, it's not quite a new show. But you're starting to take this on tour. It's a
right.
show called At Wit's End, and you're doing just one night at the Tada Theater, I know it well, on West 28th Street. That used to be where like a children's theater used to go on.
They still have a lot of activities in there. Now, this program is sponsored by Emerging Artists, and it's the one man talking. They also have a one woman standing, and then notes on a page. They have these three different events that are happening within a couple weeks, but my show is literally part of the one-man talking festival.
But is it just talking, or are you at the piano?
Oh, I do everything. I'm at the piano, I sing, I play a little bit of concertizing, and then singing some of Oscar's songs, and then he tells his stories, and he has a little bit of his ribald humor too, and I can tell one of those stories that's memorable. But he's a great character, a complex, interesting person, and one of the we're playing in New York March 13th, then in Florida March 15th in Tamarack, Florida, and I just want to let everyone know that the show is out there to be booked anywhere that anyone wants to book it too. So we're sort of in this process of moving the show along. It was done 20 years ago. Stan Freeman played Oscar Levant. He was on variety shows as a music guy in the 50s and 60s. He got a Drama Desk nomination, I think, for it in New York and a couple other places. And Joel Kimmel is the author. So they had done it 20 years ago, but it's been that long since anyone has seen this again, and I found this affinity for the piece and decided this is something I ought to do.
Well, you might, the unfortunate thing is that people under age 50 might not have ever heard or might have no idea who Oscar Levant was. Can you give us
a brief... Rabbi, you're exactly right.
Well, of course I'm right, I'm a rabbi. I get my information from Hashem. What the hell's the matter with you? No, but... See, you got it in you. You got the Jewish...
I love satyrs, so that sticks with me all the time.
But we might want to tell people who Oscar... By the way, and he was the son of Orthodox parents, so I'm excited about that part. But Oscar Levant, who was he? What did he do?
Well, he was a classical musician, a raconteur. He was this guy who was a second banana in include movie musicals like American in Paris and The Bandwagon and The Barclays of Broadway. And he would appear and be that sort of sidekick guy who had some smart things to say. And then he also had radio shows, and he had a TV show briefly. So he was a persona of the mid-20th century that everyone knew about, Hollywood-wise or otherwise.
Why has he sort of not maintained the fame over, you know, past his passing of that Al Jolson perhaps?
Other
had?
People.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I wonder if it has to do with him revealing, which he did. He was the first person to do this on the Jack Parr show, all the things that were going wrong with him, that he was addicted to pills and drugs and had depression and was institutionalized. I'm not sure, because he had he was a pretty memorable guy.
And a fine pianist, apparently.
He was a very fine piano player. Also, what happened was, in the 30s, he became very close to George Gershwin and sort of embraced George Gershwin's career and his music. So Oscar at that time stopped doing what he was doing, composing and his own creativity, and sort of latched onto George, and they became fast friends. I almost think of it as a bromance, because he was so devastated when George died early.
Right.
He was only 38. But they did everything together. Oscar would play, George would conduct George's pieces. So I think maybe because of all of that, and it's such an old-fashioned life, that people haven't come back to connect with him yet. I don't know.
Now, it's
a little bit of a mystery to me, because I've sort of embraced him and gotten more into him as I do the show.
Well, that would totally make sense. And let me ask then, like, if an actor is going to do a one-man show, let's say, about President Chester A. Arthur,
mm-hmm.
okay, or someone from that,
sure,
100, 300 years ago, they basically have free reign. They can look at a photograph or a painting, and then the voice, the mannerisms, the whatever, you can look at speeches, but, you know, the actor can do virtually what they want to.
Right.
Whereas Oscar Levant, I mean, you can hear the old radio programs, you can see him on screen in movies, kinescopes of him on TV. How much, then, as an actor, do you have to imitate, copy, and how much can you say, oh, well, people don't remember him, I don't have to be exactly the same, it's my impression.
Well, maybe maybe both of those go on. Certainly people have billed this as the impersonator Chuck Muckle, or the comedian Chuck Muckle, which is funny that they decide to go at it that way. But I'm basically embracing ideas of him, or ways that he's delivered lines, or elements of his personality. Because if you do some of the things that you see him doing on, particularly in the later times, which this deals more with in a way, he's very, I mean, it's also almost uncomfortable to watch, because he's got tics and his face is moving a mile a minute, and he's just so nervous and nerve-wracked that could have put people off, I guess.
Oh, at
but
that point.
But just sort of creating the persona of him without doing an imitation of him.
Right, but do you have, like, if you see pictures of you, you're a handsome, attractive guy with silver hair. Do you dye your hair? I mean, do you try a little bit.
Yeah, I do a little bit of a mix of color, and then it depends on the light you're under. So, I try to avoid looking like Eddie Munster, but we do a little bit. Yeah, to temper it to whatever the space is. So
now we are here in the neighborhood with just a few more minutes with What's your name?
Chuck Muckle.
Chuck Muckle! Oh, I love that name! Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Another thing that intrigued me about your bio,
mm-hmm.
is that you were in a piece that was being workshopped by none other than Hal Prince, one of the
exactly.
great directors of all Broadway lore. What was that all about? How did that go? And do you have any stories about the way Hal Prince does what Hal Prince does?
Well, I had been in a show that Jonathan Tunick musical directed the previous year, which was The Golden Apple, which is a huge through-composed score. We did it up at Bard College, north of New York City. Jonathan then had several of those people come back to do this workshop reading of, it was originally called Paradise Lost, but they changed the title eventually to Paradise Found, that Hal was directing, and we did it in New York City for a week, so I kept thinking, well, this may be the one week that I get to work with Hal Prince. He was, again, really sort of embracing and forward thinking. One of the things I was impressed with was when we did the reading, he actually sat and was part of the reading and gave all the stage directions and read everything in between. So he literally participated in the reading, which I wasn't expecting.
How long ago was this, by the way?
That was 6 years ago.
Oh, so pretty recent.
Fairly recently, yeah. And then unfortunately they did take it to London and it didn't go over so well. But at least they got the experience of doing it. Now all these people were in it: Judy Kaye and John Cullum and Maren Maisie and a whole slew of people, Broadway type.
John Cullum seems like a total pro. He just seems like...
He is, but he has this funny thing where it seems like he can't quite put it together until the very end. He has a bit of a deer, and he was very dear, and we got along, and I've done a couple reading-type shows with him. But he puts it together at the end, but it seems like it's going to take till the very end for him to finally snatch it up, you know, and throw it out there.
Huh. Maybe that's
interesting.
Process.
Interesting. That's Tova Feldshaw was the same way with another show.
Oh, but Tova Feldshaw, she was on my radio show, I should say.
Really?
Yay, Tova! Yay! Yay! Love Tova. She was
done it. She's in there. Wow, she just works and works and works.
You were with her in Grossingers, a play
yes,
called Grossingers.
Right, about Jenny Grossinger and the old Grossingers up in the Catskills. Another very neat piece. It was very interesting. I guess Ruta Lee did it down in Texas at some point, and I guess they were, you know, trying to have it, give it a life, and certainly it deserves one because it's one of those, it feels like an Evita-type story, this main character who has this wonderful, interesting time, and then she's got to make a decision at the end, and I think it's after she's even dead.
That's very tough to make a decision after you're dead.
Got to decide whether they're going to, it's okay to tear down the place because it's been her life. So I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I was just making a very terrible joke.
I missed it. Tell me.
Oh, it's going to be so good now a minute later. Yeah, the sell-by date.
Of course.
It was just about making a decision after you're dead.
So, yeah. But to Hal, one of the interesting things about that experience was, you know how you often for a rehearsal, you arrive at 5 to 10, 2 minutes to 10, 1 minute to 10. Hal was always in there. I mean, he's 80-something. So I got this idea that because older people like to arrive places early, that he'd been sitting there maybe since like 9:30, you know, waiting for everyone to go at the snap of 10. They were there early, waiting for everyone to get there to start. And, of course, all the actors are streaming in at 1 minute to 10.
Right, yes.
10 o'clock, getting ready to go. But they were set. They were ready to go as soon as we got there. So that was, I mean, it's part of the professionalism, I guess, of it. But that was interesting, too. And his participation was just really inspiring because it felt like he does things old school, the old way. And that really, really appeals to me, and that's what I feel like.
Can you extrapolate? Oh, I can't believe I thought of that word.
syllables.
What is new school? And I'm not talking about the building in New York that teaches film. I mean, how is old school different?
Well, maybe partly because I'm still slow media. I think of the old school as the old New York way of doing theater. And in fact, we have my collaborator and I, David Eisner, we were in the BMI and ASCAP musical theater workshops. We have a couple small musicals that I feel sort of address that. The thing where they're sort of intimate, you don't have to have millions of dollars worth of technical stuff like and flying and people maybe falling and getting hurt like Spider-Man and things that are just flashy and glossy and cost hundreds of dollars to go see. I feel like I'm more interested in doing old New York theater, musical comedy in the way that it was done, maybe in this time of Oscar, you know, in the mid-20th century. So I feel there's a niche for it. You have thousands of theaters all over the country, from schools to regular theaters, that are looking for shows to do that they can't do because they're too big.
Well, can I ask you, I mean, this brings us back to the show that you are doing, the Oscar Levant-based show, At Wit's End,
sure.
which you're doing in New York just for one night, and then you've got it in Florida on the 15th, and then you're looking, I mean, what is the process, now that you have this show, of finding places where, A, they'll do the show, and B, where, you know, it's worth it, because there's still cost involved. You have to get on a plane, you have to go, you have to stay up in a hotel for a night. I mean, how does all that work?
Well, it's sort of like being Willie Loman in Death of a Salesman. You go cold calling, you go visiting people, you just let them know, because I'm sort of embracing it as the producer. And Joel, bless him, Joel the writer, Joel Kimmel, has said, "Oh, that's great. When whatever performances you can find, that's great." So I've sort of embraced that myself. Yes, you're right. Then you have to sit and figure, can I afford to do this? What kind of deal can I make with such and such person? And until some other producer type comes along, I'm generating this myself.
Right. So some theaters might say, "Oh, sure, come bring it, and you'll take half the box office," but they don't even pay you. I mean, you know, we'll give you the theater to do it. I mean,
right. Yeah, but you fill up the house, or even get half a house, and then you get a decent, you get a decent take home. And what it reminds me of is, and not that I've ever done it, touring in the provinces in England. That's what it feels like. You just make your arrangements, you appear, you do your thing, and then you go on to the next one. It feels very old fashioned to me. So I've always loved the touring aspect of the theater. So I think I'm always drawn to that, even subconsciously.
And even now, it sounds like you have to do, not just for this show, but to be a working actor. Are you a full-time working actor and musician and cabaret singer in New York? Do you have to do any other jobs, or is this?
I have a variety of music jobs. In fact, my survival jobs is doing music programs in churches, of all things. I do all kinds of music related, theater related things, and have various employment in them at various times. I always say to someone, when you're coming to New York, if you can play the piano or you can type, of course now.
Typing, everybody
the whole thing, right.
works with their thumbs.
Some kind of job or other. So
actually, it's going to be interesting if suddenly they invent like Blackberries and if they invent these iPads and things that are pianos, and people start having to play concertos with their thumbs.
Right.
I think that would be kind of interesting.
It's probably coming to that.
They walk into a rehearsal hall. Oh, let me take my gloves off. And boom, 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 boom. And suddenly it's Paderewski. I don't know.
Exactly.
Just
exactly.
A thought. Again, last question or two for the delightful Mr.
Chuck Muckle.
Chuck Muckle. Any other great memories of famous people that you have worked with, stars, celebrities, anything like that? Oh, because you worked so much, I didn't realize just how many people you've worked with. Do you have any other people that spring to mind who were either really wonderful or something really funny happened or something you wouldn't expect? Throwing it out there.
Okay, well, I do want to tell a story that Oscar tells from the show as well.
Oh, okay, sure.
There's just to give people a sense of the show, and then we can come back to your thought. Oscar was on TV, and was it TV? Right, he was on TV doing live TV, and there was a point at which he made a comment about when Marilyn Monroe and Arthur Miller got married by a rabbi.
Right.
That week, he said live on the show, "Great, now he can eat her." So.
And he ended up saying he never meant it that way.
Right, he never meant it that way, right. But he got thrown off the air.
Did he really? Oh, my God.
He did, yeah. In terms of other celebrities, people who maybe wouldn't expect things from, I'm trying to think. Robert and John obviously were the main ones for me.
But it sounds like you were, you know, at least for, you've done readings and things, you've probably worked with a bunch of other, just throw out some names you've worked with and maybe something will come to mind. Who else?
Well, yeah, Karen Ziemba, anytime you see her, even if she doesn't really remember you, she'll look at you and say, "Oh, hi, how's it going?" And I'm sure she wouldn't remember my name at this point, but we had worked.
Actually, she'd probably remember your name more than you, with all due respect.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
Who could forget that name?
Who's nobody's going to forget Chuck Muckle, I'm telling you.
Right, right.
Any other people? Any other thoughts?
Because this has just happened recently, and I feel like she's been around the whole time that we've been involved in the theater in New York. I was coming from a music performance at Christmas, walking down Central Park South, and I saw this sort of still tall-looking woman in a wheelchair being pushed by probably what was a Jamaican woman, her nurse care person.
Yes.
And I see that it's Marion Seldes.
Oh.
Obviously has been a first lady of the theater for years and years and years. And I had heard that she wasn't doing well, in fact, that she had dementia. I went, I just had to cross the street and go over and say, take her hand, Miss Seldes, how wonderful it was to have you in the theater, and everybody loves you, and just take a moment with her. And she just sort of had a wide-eyed look, and it may have registered, it may have not, but someone also the other night said, you know what, it may have been as much a moment for her caregiver to see that someone might do that at any moment to sort of honor this person's wonderful career in the theater. It was a shame to see her in that state after I had run into her once, actually at 9/11. We ran into each other and didn't know each other from Adam, but had a really sort of sweet interchange that day. So it was a bittersweet moment.
I mean, I didn't even know that Marion Seldes was in that condition, because it would have been pretty recent for her to
it's
go
really
so quickly.
Recent, no.
Oh, it happens. This is what can I ask last question for Chuck? I will say your name now, lovingly,
okay.
Chuck Mockel. So, as a working actor, a touring actor, and then as someone who will, just like Marion Seldes, just like, you know, God forbid, but me, you know, you're gonna get older. What do you have a family? Are your friends your family? Are you connected to somebody?
Yeah, my partner and I have been together for 36 years. On our 35th anniversary, we got married.
But so. Is that doable in New York, or where did you do it?
In New York.
Oh, so it's legal! Yay, Mazel.
Yes. So it was a really big deal, and we were. It was
you
a wonderful.
You didn't ask
moment.
Me to officiate.
Really moved when we, because it was just a month or two after the bill had passed. So it was a really highlight moment. So.
I cannot believe you did not ask me to officiate at the wedding.
Well, you know what?
Oh, I'm Jewish.
We had a woman rabbi be our officiator, and we stepped on a light bulb instead of a glass because she said you can do that. The glass doesn't break as fast. So
that's why. Wait a minute, but so your husband or partner? What would you refer to? Your
I still use spouse.
Spouse. Okay, perfect.
Yeah, so.
It's Jewish.
No, he's not.
Some, wait a minute.
He does get mailings from, because we live up the river, he gets mailings from the Rhinebeck Jewish Center. I think they think his name is Jewish because his name is Lance Ringel. So it's there are...
All right, but no, but now I'm... You're not Jewish.
No, I'm not.
And he's not Jewish.
And he's not.
And you were married by a rabbi.
Right, because he works at Vassar College, and it's a very embracing, all-embracing place, and we went to try to find a minister of some sort, and actually the Episcopal minister there was a very sweet guy, and we wanted him to do it, but he said, no, I'm not allowed. So we decided we'll ask the Reformed rabbi, and she said, yes, she'd love to. So in deference to her and the Jewish religion and my penchant for things Jewish, we said, let's do it.
Are you kosher now?
Kosher, right.
Are you following it?
Yes, I must be.
She probably snuck a prayer in there now that both of you, you don't even know it, but by taking the vow.
She may have in retrospect.
I hope you don't have to get circumcisions.
That right. Would be,
they'll have to cut Chuck Muckle's pukle, which would
exactly,
be a very scary thing.
Pukle Muckle?
Pukle Muckle, that's it. Oh, it has been just a delight talking with actor, singer, and performer, entertainer, Chuck Mockel. Everybody, remember that he is going to be playing just one night at the Tada Theater in New York, 15 West 28th Street. It's right on 6th Avenue, right in the Flower District there. The show is called At Wit's End. He's playing Oscar Levant. And if you miss him on the 13th there, you take a plane, you catch him in Florida on the 15th. What, where in Florida?
At Tamarack Performing Arts Center in Tamarack, Florida.
Tamarack PAC. To see Chuck Mockel as Oscar Levant. Mr. Mockel, I love saying Mr. Mockel even. Mr. Mockel.
I'm going to tune in to hear you saying it on other shows.
I will be saying this. You know, a lot of times I'm talking about Zalman Lautek, and I'm talking about other people. What was the guy's name in the Zulu and the Zeta? That musical. What was, oh, oh. What,
I'm forgetting.
Not Lou Gossett Jr., not the Schwarzer, the other one. What's his name? Oh, I can't believe it. Well, it'll come to me later.
I can't remember.
4 a.m., I'll wake up and say, like, oh, of course it was so-and-so.
Exactly.
But but Chuck Muckle takes the place of, especially now that you're partially Jewish. This is
right.
Exciting to
me. At least I feel that way.
Bless you for sharing with us and coming to us in the neighborhood. Much success with this show and with everything that you are doing and with your marriage and with your health and with your life. Thank you!
Thank you, Rabbi Saul. I appreciate it. It was great fun.
Likewise, Chuck Muckle.
Thank you.
AM on my way, teaching school every day. 1 week till graduation and then back to school once again. Surprised how time flies, surprised more at me. I use my vacations to get my degree. But there's something about the city in the summer that gets me through somehow. It's the opening number for the rest of my life. Right now,